You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Midrash of the Week podcast. For our last pre-Purim installment today, I'd like to take a look at a midrash on the story of the Megillah, taken from Esther Rabbah. Let's first do, however, a quick review of some of the details of the story in the Megillah upon which this midrash is based. So in Perek Bet of Megillat Esther, Esther becomes Ahasuerus's new queen, replacing Vashti, and, as is well known, Mordechai tells her to keep her Jewish identity a secret. So Esther settles into her new life in the palace, and Mordechai settles into his regular place at the palace gate, right, Bishar HaMelech. And we are told right afterwards that Bigtan and Teresh, two of the king's guards, plot to kill him, right? Plot to kill Ahasuerus. Mordechai, who is sitting strategically at the palace gate, hears of this plan. He tells Esther. Esther tells the king in Mordechai's name. The matter is investigated, and Bigtan and Teresh are hung. The king is saved. And this is all written up in the Sefer HaZichronot, right, the Chronicles of the Kings, of the King, the Book of Memories, and then is promptly forgotten. In Perek Gimel, Haman plots to kill the Jews. Because Mordechai won't bow down to him. In Perek Dalet, Esther agrees to Mordechai's request that she has to do something about this. And in Perek Hay, she comes before the king, and she invites him and Haman to the feast that night. At the feast, she invites them to another feast to take place the next day, right? And this way, she kind of leads Ahasuerus along, wondering, you know, what is it that she wants from him. In Perek Vav, right, we are told that night, the night between the two feasts, Nadadashnat HaMelech, right, the king could not sleep, right, literally the king's sleep wanders or departs from him. And the king asks that they bring to him his Sefer HaZichronot, right, to read from it. And they read of the events surrounding the Bigtan and Teresh insurrection, and the fact that Mordechai had saved the king's life. The king learns that Mordechai was never rewarded for saving his life. And at that very moment, Haman happens to be coming to ask the king to hang Mordechai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Right? Haman approaches the palace, and immediately, before Haman even speaks, the king tells him that he has to go and honor Mordechai by leading him around on the king's horse, wearing the king's clothing. In a manner that is, you know, typical of Megillat Esther, all of these pieces of the story fall delightfully together, right? And the structure of the story and how these elements fall together seems rather simple, right? The king is unable to sleep, right? I always imagined, right, that he requests that they bring him this less than scintillating text to kind of lull him back to sleep. And as it happens, it turns out to be rather interesting to the king, who had forgotten all about the incident with Bigtan and Teresh, and just as the king decides that something must be done to reward Mordechai, right, Haman, in an unfortunate act of timing, comes to request permission to hang Mordechai. But in the end, he ends up honoring Mordechai instead. And this last turn of events is sort of like a, you know, gleeful sort of thing for the anti-Haman readers of the Megillah, who relish, you know, his bad luck and his bad timing. It's a good story, right? It's easy to understand. And the king's sleeplessness and the reading of the book of Zichronot are merely happenstance, right? They are things that occurred which happened to lead Ahasuerus to find out about Mordechai saving his life. Along comes the Midrash and offers another reading, which is actually a brilliant interpretation of these events, which led greater depth to the events that are described in the Megillah. The Midrash is as follows. It's from Esther Rabbah. For those who are interested, you can find the text of the Midrash on the website. V'nadadashnat HaMelech Ahasuerus. Right? The king's sleep was disturbed. The king's sleep wandered away from him. Shera'a b'chalamo et Haman. Shenatal saif lehargo. Right? He saw. Why was the king unable to sleep? Because he saw in a dream that Haman had taken a sword to kill him. Vinivhal, Vahikits Mishnato, and he got disturbed by this, right? He got frightened by this, and he awoke in terror from his sleep. Va'amar lisofrav, he told his scribes, Haviu Sefer HaZichronot likrot vilirot masha avaralav. Why did he want to bring the Sefer HaZichronot? In order to read, right, to see what events had occurred. Ufatchu Hasfarim, Ubatsumat Hadavar Shehigid Mordechai al Bigtana Vateresh. Right? And they opened the book and they found how Mordechai had informed against Bigtana Teresh. V'kevan she'amul ha-melech, hine aman omen b'chatzer, amar ha-melech emet ha-davar sh'ra'iti b'chalomi, lo ba'ze b'sha'azu ela le'hargeni. Right? So he read about the Big Tana Teresh story, he heard about the story, and then when they told the king, behold, Haman is standing in the court, right? Because remember, Haman, right at that moment, is coming to the palace to ask to kill Mordechai. When they tell him that it's Haman who's standing outside, the king in the Midrash says to himself, what I saw in my dream is true. The only reason Haman can be coming at this hour is to kill me. Now, the Midrash on one level is trying to investigate the two elements of the story, which our simple understanding of the story kind of ignored, right, or rushed over, right? Number one, why was the king's sleep disturbed? And why did he specifically ask for the Sefer HaZichronot? This is not the only midrash to ask these questions, right? There are other midrashim that answer these questions, right? A different midrash, perhaps more famous than the one we just read, offers this, the explanation that Ahasuerus was disturbed by the fact that Esther had invited Haman to the two feasts as well, right? If they're having a nice intimate feast, why Haman? Why is Haman invited as well? Not only to one, but to both feasts. And he suspects in that midrash that they are plotting against him, right? They're plotting against his life, and that is why he could not sleep. The king, in that midrash, wonders, if this is true that they're plotting against me, is there nobody in the palace who would inform me? Right? No friend of mine who would tell me that this is happening? And then he wonders, perhaps there was someone who had helped me in the past and I didn't reward him, and therefore he's not interested in helping me anymore. Whereupon he calls for the Sefer HaZichronot to try to figure out who that might have been, and he's reminded about Mordechai who saved his life and was never rewarded. Right? That's a different attempt in the Midrash to understand our story. Our Midrash suggests something else. Right? The king's sleep is disturbed because he had a dream that Haman wanted to kill him. Now, the logic of the sequence of events in this midrash is less obvious than in the other one I mentioned. But the wording of the midrash implies that the events are connected by cause and effect. Why does the dream prompt Ahasuerus to have the Book of Chronicles read? Why does he want to know what events have occurred? Right? Masha Avaralev. What is the significance of the Big Tana Teresh story? Right? Why does the king then conclude, right, without a doubt, that Haman has really come to kill him? All of these questions really relate back to the first thing that is claimed in the Midrash. Right? The fact that Ahasuerus dreamed that Haman wanted to kill him. Right? Why does Ahasuerus dream this? Why does he dream that Haman wanted to kill him? A look back at the events leading up to Ahasuerus' sleepless night, together with this link in the Midrash to the Big Tana Teresh story, suggests an answer to that question. Right? What has been going on up until now in the story? So let's take a look at what the different characters of the story have been doing, right, as described in the Megillah itself. Mordechai, we know, is sitting very conspicuously in sackcloth at the palace gate. Right? When he finds out that Haman wants to kill the Jews, he immediately puts on sackcloth and purposely sits at the palace gate where you are not allowed to sit in sackcloth in order to draw attention to himself. Right? So everybody knows that Haman is sitting in sackcloth at the palace gate. Esther, for her part, is in the palace. Right? And she is very settled into her life in the palace. Right? We know in her conversation with Mordechai that she's not so quick to want to, like, ruffle what goes on in the palace, because she knows there's a very specific way that things work, and she cannot just, you know, ruin that or mess, you know, mess with that. So she is in the palace, but of late she clearly is hinting to the king that something is on her mind, right? That she needs to tell him, right? That she wants something from him, and right, this she accomplishes by inviting him to first one feast and then to another feast. Chabad, for his part, right, he has been moving very swiftly up the ranks. Right, he is now above all of the other Sarim. And in Perek Gimel, he requested from the king, and he was granted permission to kill all of the Jews. Now, these facts are swirling around, perhaps in the subconscious of Ahasuerus's mind, right? And he can't sleep. Trying to figure out what is bugging him, right? Why he can't sleep. He calls for the Sefer HaZichronot, right? And I kind of imagined him sitting up suddenly straight in bed and demanding, bring me the Sefer HaZichronot. He wants to read Masha Avaralav, right? Maybe something about, the events of the past will jog his memory. Like, what is it that's bothering him now? Why can't he sleep? What is it that's something that's not sitting right with him? And they read and they read until he finds it, right? The last time that these elements all came together, right? Mordechai sitting at the palace gate, Esther wanting to tell him something. The last time these events came together were in the Big Tana Teresh story. And what about Haman, right? What about the key element to the story, right? The Big Tana Teresh equivalent, right? After reading in his Sefer HaZichronot about the Big Tana Teresh incident, the final link is made between Haman and the previous would-be assassins. Right? Haman, by killing all of the Jews, was eliminating Mordechai, right? The Jew who had once saved his life. And it's important to recognize that Mordechai was known as a Jew. Right? There are articles written about this, how he was something of a court Jew. Right? Haman, Mordechai HaYehudi, he's known as throughout the Megillah, right? When Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman, Haman gets angry, right? He wants to kill all the Jews because he found out that Mordechai is the Jew. It's known that Mordechai is the Jew, and this information is passed on to Haman, and again, by Haman killing all of the Jews, he was eliminating Mordechai, right, who was the most visible Jew, right, in Shushan. And this connection is intimated by the end of the Midrash, right, of our Midrash, in the remark that when Haman appeared at the king's court, Ahasuerus immediately concluded that he had come to kill him. Which was, of course, he came in order to ask the king permission to kill Mordechai, right? So while Haman might not have been coming to murder Ahasuerus as Ahasuerus dreamed, he did intend to kill the very person who the king had just learned a second earlier had saved his life, right? Knowing that someone wanted to kill the man who had protected him in the past made the king feel threatened, or as the Midrash puts it, as if Haman was standing over him with a sword. So, far from simply being a piece of information that we are told in order to understand what happens later on, the Big Tana Teresh story really plays a very big role in the Megillah. First of all, from a purely, in a more structural way, it presents the mechanism, it presents to us, the readers, the mechanism to which leads to Haman's downfall. Meaning that already at the beginning of the Megillah, right, when the players are kind of like set in place, we are told that Esther is now the queen, that Mordechai tells her to keep her identity a secret, something which is important for what happens later on, and then he himself, when she's in the palace, he goes and settles back down at the palace gate. And it's that setup, right, which eventually brings to Haman's downfall, which initially brings down Big Tana Teresh, right? We are told that she becomes queen. He says, don't say that you are Jewish. And then immediately we are told the Big Tana Teresh story, as if the Big Tana Teresh story is sort of like presenting us a template for how Haman, the real bad guy, the big bad guy, is going to fall later on, right? Because Mordechai at the palace gate is going to hear about the events. He's going to tell Esther who's in the palace, and then she's going to tell the queen, right? And that's exactly how Haman's downfall comes about later on. But even more than that, or more relevant to our Midrash, The Biktan and Taresh incident provided a precedent which allowed Esther to manipulate the current events of the palace, right, to evoke feelings of suspicion against Haman, right? She recreates an atmosphere of that event, right, by, you know, her being in the palace, Mordechai being Mishar Melech, which she didn't do that, Mordechai did that, but with him at the palace gate and her being in the palace wanting to speak to the king, and she recreates the atmosphere of the event for the king so that he feels as if it's happening all over again, right? By beginning to have feelings of suspicion against Haman, by her inviting him to the meals, and of course by him being aware that he's a powerful tsar, she recreates that feeling for the king, so he feels subconsciously that this is happening all over again. So the account of that episode, and of the episode of Biktan and Taresh at the beginning of the Megillah, not only foreshadows what is to transpire later on, it sets the later story in the proper context in which it can be understood. Right? How is it that Esther managed to convince the king to save the Jews? So the rest of the story, of course, plays itself out perfectly. By the time Esther tells Ahasuerus that Haman wants to kill all the Jews, right? Ahasuerus is already primed against Haman. Ahasuerus, in the end, ultimately kills Haman, not because Haman wanted to kill the Jews per se, right? But because Haman was undermining the king's authority, and in that way, Esther succeeds in eliminating Haman in a way that she knows will work with her insecure husband, the king. So this midrash that we looked at today, right, in a typical midrashic style, adds an element that is not in the Megillah itself, right? The content of Ahasuerus' dream. Nowhere in the dream does it say what Ahasuerus was dreaming or what made him sleepless that night. Or why it doesn't spell out clearly why he wanted to read for the Sefer Zichronot. But by adding these subtle touches, right, that he was dreaming about Haman wanting to kill him, and by suggesting that there's a connection between whatever it was that he was dreaming and the bringing of the Sefer Zichronot, the Midrash leads us to a much deeper understanding and appreciation of what is quite possibly the pshat of the story, right? So we see here a midrash, where a midrash is often thought of as not being pshat, but we see how a midrash, by adding in things which may or may not be true, we don't know that that's what Ahasuerus really dreamed, but adding in those midrashic elements leads us to actually to what the pshat of the story really is. Purim Sameach to all of you.